नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं तदाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तां सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। We are in seventh canto, seventh chapter of 11th canto, text number 20. So those who have not completed the test, maybe they can either do it after the class or otherwise you can submit it on Sunday. And just make sure that before you leave, you can collect last week's test papers, answer papers. So Uddhava approached Krishna. So Krishna had instructed in the first 12 verses of this chapter, Krishna instructed Uddhava how he should be equipoised, how he should transcend the three modes of nature, and being a well-wisher of all living entities, he can travel all over the world without any disturbance. So he gave instruction essentially on renunciation in the first 12 verses. So then after hearing these verses, then Uddhava asked questions to Krishna. He glorified Krishna by saying, Yogesha Yoga Vinyasa Yoga Atman Yoga Sambhava. You are the personification of yoga. And because of you, even an unqualified person can actually attain the perfection of yoga. And then Uddhava said, your instructions are very good, but then they are very difficult to follow for a person who is actually attached to sense objects. And especially it is difficult to follow for a person who is not devoted to you. And then he said, actually, please instruct me so that how I can easily carry out your instructions. So this is the question which Uddhava is asking to Krishna. And then he's asking in a submissive mood by saying that I'm actually absorbed in the conception of me and mine. So you please tell me how I can easily carry out your instructions. And then he glorified Krishna, you are the best among all the teachers. He said that Satyasya te Swadrisha Atman Atmanonyam Vaktaram Isha Vibhudesh Apinanu Chakshe. There cannot be even great demigods also. They are also under your illusory energy. When they cannot be compared to such a teacher as you. And then he glorified Krishna. Why Krishna is the perfect master by telling different qualities of Krishna in the 18th verse. And then now Krishna started speaking in the 19th verse. Ramchandra Prabhu, just bagal mein jarak shop hai na. He just go and given the sloka sheet for Xerox. Just go and collect it.
You have given that?
You just, there's no need to pay any Lakshmi. 35 copies I have done. So Krishna started speaking in the 19th verse. He said that actually, generally, those human beings, Prayena Manuja Loki Loka Tattva Vichakshana, those who are expert in understanding the actual situation of the world, they actually deliver themselves from the inauspicious life of gross material gratification by their intelligence. Those who can expertly analyze, they are able to rise themselves beyond the inauspicious life of gross material gratification on their own. So here, of course, we discussed this verse somewhat last week. So if we see Uddhava's mood and Krishna's mood, like Uddhava, he asked that, please tell me how I can easily carry out your instructions. And then he not only asked that question, but he also asked in a submissive mood. So Krishna, as I mentioned previously, one is to ask the right questions, and another is to have the right mood to ask those questions. And Krishna also, while instructing, when a person is instructing, one is to actually enlighten a person and another is to enlighten in an encouraging manner. So Uddhava asked the question in a submissive mood. So Krishna, when he is using the word prayena manuja loki, prayena, here generally those people who are fallen, they can know the truth by the strength of their own intelligence, even without the instructions of a guru. Even those people who are fallen, they can understand the truth by their own intelligence without the instructions of a guru. And you are actually more intelligent than any of the demigods. So why are you actually you are so intelligent, so you can definitely easily transcend the material nature, you can easily rise yourself from the inauspicious life of gross material existence by your intelligence. So Uddhava, he asked in a submissive mood. So Krishna is replying in the beginning in an encouraging manner. So Uddhava was feeling discouraged by saying that I am so fallen. So but Krishna is saying that you are definitely more intelligent than even the demigods, so therefore you can easily actually cross beyond this cycle of birth and death. So that way Krishna is actually encouraging in a enlightening in an encouraging manner. And as I mentioned previously, that this section Krishna is telling Uddhava that one should take initiative. One should actually take initiative from one. We should take our own initiative. Many times, when a person goes to a spiritual master, when we say that one should follow the instructions of a spiritual master, but that is the secret of success. So sometimes in trying to emphasize that the point of the disciple taking his initiative, that principle might get lost. We just have to follow what the spiritual master says. We don't feel that I have to take some initiative to use my intelligence. So that we also have to actually put effort from our side. Last week Devadatta Thuru was saying, he wants, one person came to Prabhupada and asked that, please save me, Swamiji. So Prabhupada said, I can teach you the process by which you can save yourself. Means I can only teach, but then you have to take the initiative to accept the process so that you can actually save yourself. Our enthusiasm means, what does Prabhupada how does he define enthusiasm in Nectar of Instruction? Anybody knows?
Endeavor with intelligence.
Endeavor? Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. Means we have to use our intelligence and then put endeavor. That means we have to take our own initiative also. So Krishna is mentioning that. So that is why, as he mentioned, that to understand that the material world is miserable, we don't need the help of a guru. If a person uses his higher intelligence from his higher nature, by that one can understand the material world is miserable. So when Krishna is saying that using one's intelligence, we'll just say the next verse and then we'll go ahead. Atmano guru ratmaiva purushasya visheshatah yat pratyakshanu manabhyam shreyo savanu vindate.
Intelligent person, expert in perceiving the world around him and in applying sound logic, can achieve real benefit through his own intelligence. Thus, sometimes one acts as one's own accepting spiritual master.
So here Krishna is saying, an intelligent person by using pratyaksha and anumana, who is expert in analyzing the situation of this world through his pratyaksha means direct perception, and by applying sound logic, by anumana, such a person can understand what is the ultimate benefit. Shreyosav anuvindate. So in this way, one's own intelligence acts as one's spiritual master, because he is using his intelligence to learn. So in this way, one's intelligence acts as one's own spiritual master. So of course, there's one example coming to the point of how we should take our own initiative. If we see any bona fide spiritual master, they do not actually force a person that, okay, whatever I say, you have to follow it. They don't say that. They say that after giving the teachings, they inspire a person to use their intelligence to take the initiative to follow their instructions. So Krishna also mentioned that Vimrushayad Aseshena Yatechasi Tatakuru. Now I have given the instruction, now you deliberate on what I have spoken, and then you decide what you want to do. He is telling Krishna, Arjuna, to take the initiative. And even Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, after giving his instructions to his classmates, he also says that Nirupyatam iha swartha. Nirupyatam, that means now you ascertain for yourself. I have spoken, now after full consideration, after full deliberation, you try to understand what is the living entity's actual interest in fruitive activities, which only results in intense labor and misery. So he is inspiring them to actually take the initiative to use their intelligence. So here Krishna is also mentioning that. And Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, when he meets one Avadhut Brahmana. So Avadhut Brahmana in the 7th canto, I think 13th or 14th chapter is there. He actually instructs Prahlad Maharaj. When Avadhut Brahmana is speaking to Prahlad Maharaj, he also speaks in a similar mood. It's a very beautiful verse. Avadhut Brahmana says, in the human form of life, different people come together for enjoying sense gratification. But by actual experience, I have observed that none of them are happy. So because of seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. And then he says that sukam asyatmano rupam sarve ho paratistanu mana samsparishyam drushtva bogan svapsyami samvishan svapsyami. So he says that the actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. And this happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. And then he says, therefore, considering this subject matter, I have ceased from all material activities and I am lying down here. So, svapsyami means, so the Brahmana is saying that I am sitting silently, thinking deeply about all these material activities. Listen, he is just observing the different events of this world, different people of this world. And by seeing all those, how different people are suffering, so by thinking about it deeply, he is actually refrained from all those materialistic activities and then he is just sitting silently. And then he says that, so in this way, I have actually spoken about the secret knowledge of Atma, although it may not be approved by common people and scriptures. In the sense, like when he is saying that, when Prahlad Maharaj is saying that, from where did you learn all these things? Then the Avadhut Brahmana says, I have learned from two gurus. I have learned from Python and from Bumblebee. See, from a commoner's point of view, it may appear that the knowledge which I have is not approved by scriptures, because I am saying that I am learned from Bumblebee or from this. But actually, whatever I have spoken, the knowledge which I have learned, it is exactly according to the scriptures. So in that sense, the principle is that he has, by observing the different events of this world, by using the intelligence from his higher nature, not from the lower nature. From the higher nature, a person can come to the conclusions of the scriptures. Like, for example, a simple example for intelligence from lower nature and higher nature. Like once a teacher was conducting an experiment in the class. Teacher brought a liquor bottle and then put an insect in the liquor bottle. And then when she put the insect within the liquor bottle, the insect actually was insect died in the liquor bottle. And she asked the question, so what do you learn from this? So one student said that when we drink liquor, all the worms in the body will get killed. So this is what actually is like learning something using intelligence from the lower nature. But she wanted to teach the lesson that how when you drink liquor, it will actually it will spoil your intestines, your liver and lungs will get will become weak. So in that sense, so that is what Krishna is saying. So if we see here, like especially the comments, this particular verse, Atmano Gurur Atmaiva, this particular verse can be used by people for actually propagating a certain deviant philosophy. That is there is no need of a guru. In this Oh My God, that movie, different movie they say. But there is no need of a middleman to approach God. So one verse which they can use to support their philosophy is maybe this verse. Because Krishna is saying that one's intelligence can act as one's own spiritual master. But actually when you say that there is no need of a middleman to approach God, so by saying like that, a person is acting like a middleman. By instructing, there is no need of a guru, he is acting as a guru. So Chaitanya Charan wrote, one article he has mentioned, it is like an oxymoron. Oxymoron means, refuting one's own statement. Like for example, this person is a courageous coward. How can somebody be courageous and also be coward? So when a person is saying that there is no need of a guru to approach God, so by saying like that he is acting like a guru. So of course, this verse can be used to support their philosophy, but the acharyas, they are quick to point out, they are saying that a sensible and reasonable person can acquire real knowledge and happiness simply by carefully observing the world around him. So Jiva Goswami is mentioning the knowledge acquired by one's perception and intelligence leads one to appreciate the value of the bona fide spiritual master. It's like when a person with his higher intelligence understands by observing the different events of this world the real knowledge, then a person actually appreciates the value of the importance of a bona fide guru. It does not take a person away from guru, it actually inspires a person, it makes him aware of the fortunate position of having a guru. So that's why he is making this point. Birds of a feather flock together. It means when a person is actually enlightened, he seeks the association of other enlightened persons. So Prabhupada writes this in two more purports, once in the first canto and another in the fourth canto, the same statement. The fourth canto, when the four Kumaras arrive, Prithu Maharaj was in the assembly, he was giving instructions to his citizens. And the four Kumaras arrived, Prithu Maharaj was, it's described that he was spontaneously attracted towards the four Kumaras, just like a materialistic person would be spontaneously attracted towards the sense objects. So there in that purport he again quotes the same statement, birds of a feather flock together. So when a person is actually enlightened, he is eager for the company of other such great souls. Thus by one's sensitive and rational observation of this world, one should come to appreciate the value of the spiritual life and the association of devotees. So this actually, these verses, again they talk about two important qualities. The first kind of this verse comes, Tashadadana Munayo Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya Pashyant Atmani Chatmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya. Tashadadana Munayo means one has to be faithful and also thoughtful. So here when Krishna is saying a person should use one's higher intelligence to understand the to come to know about the real, what is one's real welfare, real benefit, means he is telling us how one should be thoughtful, one should use one's intelligence. And then he says when a person is actually enlightened, he is seeking for the association of a bona fide spiritual master, he appreciates the value of a bona fide spiritual master. That shows how a person is actually faithful. Because when a person is like he wants to actually take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, that shows the quality of being faithful to your guru. So in this way, Krishna is these two qualities, faithfulness and thoughtfulness. That's Shraddhadana. Shraddhadana means faithful, and Munayo means thoughtful. One has to be faithful and thoughtful. So one purport in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that a devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. A devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. So,
what is Shruta
Grihitaya? Shruta Grihitaya. Yeah. Tashadadana Munayo Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya. Bhaktiya Shruta Grihitaya means like, by hearing from the scriptures. If one has to perform devotional service according to the statements of the scriptures, by hearing from the scriptures. Shruta Grihitaya. So basically, if you see, scripture, when Krishna is telling us to use our intelligence, many times people think that when a person takes to spirituality, if you go to religion, if you take to spirituality, that means people fear that, oh, my freedom will be taken away. My freedom will be taken away. No, but actually, here Krishna is not saying that, oh, you have to follow what I say. He's saying a person should use his intelligence to understand. No, the spirituality or the scriptures, they do not take away our freedom. In fact, they give us a choice of another freedom. In the sense, like before, when a person does not accept spirituality or religion, our choices are only between one material pleasure and another material pleasure. Our choices to get happiness is through either through this sense object or through that sense object. Only on the material platform we have actually choices. But when we take this, when we read scriptures and when we actually come in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, I mean take to spirituality, they give us a choice of another freedom, the sense that, oh, you can choose between material pleasure or between spiritual pleasure. So previously this choice was not the spiritual pleasure, connecting with Krishna and experiencing spiritual happiness. So here now they are giving another choice has come, and that choice is also not forced upon a person. One has to actually use one's intelligence. So if you remember that, as I mentioned, that this verse can be used by people to justify there is no need of a guru. Even if you had read this Journey Home book, and Maharaj goes to the yoga conference in Delhi. So there is he goes to attend one particular lecture or something, and then there's one famous philosopher, J. Krishnamurti. He came to give a lecture, and he comes and he actually speaks this philosophy. He said, there is no need of a guru in order to actually advance in spiritual life. There are people who actually have this kind of philosophy. And he, of course, he has followers, but he is preaching that he has followers. And once, so he was actually going on a airplane, and then he was reading some other book of some other philosopher. So then somebody asked him that, oh, you said that there is no need of a guru, then why are you reading the book written by this particular Swami? He said, I was a little bored, so I wanted to actually read this. So in that sense, one can use this verse to actually justify one's wrong philosophy. And I also mentioned that if Krishna is saying that, oh, there is no need of a guru, if that is what Krishna means by this verse, then Krishna would have rejected the surrender of Uddhava. Krishna did not reject the surrender of Uddhava. So within the context of taking guidance from a guru, there is also the principle of taking initiative from our side to follow the guru's instructions. Within that same principle of taking shelter of a guru, we have to take our intelligence to actually, we have to use our intelligence, we have to take initiative from our side to follow the guru's instructions. So that is why as Prabhupada explains in the chapter on Pandavas retire timely. So like everyone has to fly one's own plane. So there is one very beautiful letter of Prabhupada which is actually worth reading in this particular context. So I would just read some certain statements of Prabhupada in this, from this particular letter. So Prabhupada mentions, he says that some of the points in this letter is that he says that what should be centralized and what should not be centralized. He says book publication, book printing and distribution should be centralized. Like BBT, Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, book publication, that should be centralized. But the individual temples should be decentralized. He says, do not centralize anything. Each temple must remain independent and self-sufficient. So why is he actually telling each temple should be decentralized? Because the reason is that when each temple is decentralized, then it gives an impetus for the local people to take responsibility, to take initiative as how to actually how to develop that particular temple, how to develop the community. Otherwise, if everything is centralized, the money is coming from one particular source, then they will feel, oh, we don't have to endeavor, oh, it will come from there. So Prabhupada is saying book publication should be centralized. Because scriptures are something, it is going to be same for the next 10,000, for all time to come, but for the next 10,000 years the books will be the same. But individual temples should be decentralized. So Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness movement is for training men to be independently thoughtful and competent in all types of departments of knowledge and action, and not for making bureaucracy. Once there is bureaucracy, the whole thing will be spoiled. And then he says, there must be always individual striving and work and responsibility. Competitive spirit. And not that one shall dominate and distribute benefits to the others and they do nothing but beg from you and you provide. Saying that there must be individual striving and taking responsibility. It is not that one person only supplies the resources for all others, then that will not actually inspire others to take some individual initiative. So he says that this will be help people to train men how to do these things, and they shall develop reliability and responsibility. Then people will actually grow. So then he says that there's another important statement. He says that our leaders shall be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual, spontaneous and voluntary. Prabhupada is saying one should not kill one's individual spirit of service, individual, spontaneous and voluntary. So he says the art of management means that to draw out the spontaneous loving spirit of sacrifice, to draw out the spontaneous loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna. What is the art of management? That means like art of management is not to actually make force people to get things done. But you inspire the people in such a way that they spontaneously come forward to actually to take up responsibility, to sacrifice some energy for Krishna. So therefore he says that leaders should try to create fresh challenge to the devotees so that they will agree enthusiastically to rise and meet it. The same principle applies in the case of parents also to raising the children. In the sense, when we... There is a some discipline has to be enforced, but at the same time, we should not kill the individual spirit of the people to do a particular activity according to their nature. Like suppose somebody is a artist or something, you don't kill that spirit by saying, no, you have to study only this subject, not that, or you can't become an artist. So we have to encourage their particular individual spirit and encourage their individual initiative. So we have to inspire people to draw the spontaneous loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna. So basically Prabhupada is emphasizing about the importance of how one should be independently thoughtful. But it does not mean that a person becomes rebellious to the authorities. It doesn't mean that. It means like the principle of taking our own initiative. Taking our own initiative. So we see here, so many times in this particular section of in this Uddhava Gita, Krishna is putting, he is putting the onus of learning from the teacher to the seeker. So many times a disciple or a seeker, he may say that a seeker or a disciple, he may become passive by saying that it's ultimately the guru's responsibility that I should learn something. So the fact that I have not learnt means like guru has not discharged the responsibility. Means like a person becomes passive, a person becomes lazy, putting the whole responsibility on the teacher. But to avoid such laziness on the part of the seekers, in this section Krishna is putting the whole he is putting the responsibility on the seekers, that they should put effort to actually internalize the spiritual knowledge. They should actually use their intelligence, they should actually put effort to actually understand and realize what the spiritual master has taught. So otherwise, one can become passive. So we see here that so this particular section tells that how those things in this world that demonstrate the life's truths can also be considered as gurus, because they reinforce the guru's teachings. You will see later Krishna will give the example of Avanti Brahmana, his 24 gurus. So this Avanti Brahmana is considering these 24 things as gurus because he is learning certain teachings which he had learned from his guru. All these 24 things, whatever principles he learned, what he has learned from guru is actually reinforced by actually observing this world by using the higher intelligence. And I mentioned that pastime last week, that how Prabhupada told that devotee Ishan Prabhu, he said that, you tell me some service, what I can do for you. So Prabhupada answered, you tell me what you can do for Krishna. So Prabhupada encouraged him to actually take up the initiative. So we can take up the initiative and then take the permission of the superiors, and then you can go ahead with that.
Two quick points. I will not take much time. Chaitanya Prabhu said in this regard that if we don't take initiative, then we can eternally wait. Because sometimes after practicing spirituality for some years, we start thinking that something will automatically happen. So if we wait for that time, then it will never come. And second point is about the importance of intelligence. If you remember the third chapter, Bhagavad Gita says, third, second, Budhinashat Pranashati, 2.64 on that session. So Balde Vidya Bhushan says that intelligence is like a senapati, commander-in-chief. So we need to, one of the processes of controlling of mind is to make the intelligence strong. If it is not strong, then if once intelligence is destroyed, then we are doomed. That is what Buddha explains. And about this Acharya Upasana, one point that comes is that Krishna is going to reject that when he is saying that one should have his own guru, then he would have not asked in the future sections of Uddhava Gita. He, one of the items he mentions is Acharya Upasana.
तस्माद् गुरुं प्रपद्येत जिज्ञासु श्रेय उत्तम शाब्दे परे च निशान. So we also discussed about the Shastra Moolaka Anuman last week, as I mentioned. Like, what we have heard from the scriptures are from the Guru, and then we observe some things in the world. Based on the observation, we do Anuman, how it actually confirms what you have heard from the scriptures or from the Guru. So this kind of vichar, this kind of, actually this is called as Shastra Moolaka Anuman. We do reasoning to harmonize Pratyaksha and Shabda by using logic. Like what you have observed, how it is actually agreeing with what is there in the scriptures. Basically seeing the world through the eyes of the scriptures. And this is called as, actually, this kind of reasoning is called as Shastra Moolaka Anuman, or is also called as Vichar. So, of course, we talked about how before a person comes to spirituality, we talked about the journey home book. Even if using one's higher intelligence, a person can learn certain principles. And after coming to Krishna consciousness, based on what you have heard from Guru and the scriptures, then we can see the world through the eyes of the Shastra. And then we can reinforce, our teachings can become more reinforced by confirming, oh, this is what I have heard in the scriptures, oh, this is actually being confirmed by this particular event in this world. So in this way, we can actually do the Shastra Moolaka Anuman before and after. So, we'll go to the next verse. Purushatve cha mam dhira sankhya yoga visharada avistaram prapashyanti sarva shaktyuva brahmitam.
In the human form of life, those who are self-controlled and expert in the spiritual science of sankhya can directly see me along with all of my potencies.
So here he is saying that Sankhya Yoga Visharada, he is saying that, he is mentioning 4 points. Who can actually see me with all my energies? A human being, Purushatve, and then second is Mam Dhira. Prabhupada is translated as one who is self-controlled in the human form of life, and a human being who is self-controlled, second condition. Dhira can also mean those who are without envy. A human being who is self-controlled or who is non-envious. And thirdly, Sankhya Yoga Visharada. So Sankhya Yoga Visharada, it is translated as one who is expert in the spiritual science of Sankhya. Spiritual science of Sankhya. But Vishnu Chakotaku says, Sankhya Yoga Visharada means one who is expert in Jnana and one who is expert in Bhakti. So when a person has these 4 qualities, human being who is non-envious or self-controlled, and thirdly, we can say one who is expert in the spiritual science of Sankhya, or one who is expert in Jnana and one who is expert in Bhakti. So these 4 qualities, if a person has these 4 qualities, then what a person can do? Avistaram prapashyanti. Prapashyanti means he can directly see what? Sarva shakti upabrahmitam. He can directly see me endowed with all of my energies. So we can see here that first of all, we can see the importance of human form of life, which is also explained in the next verse. So only the human form of life a person can endeavor for immortality. And then, so the Sankhya Yoga means the analytical study of matter and spirit, analytical study of the material world. So So Kapila Dev in the third canto, the 9 chapters 24 to 33, 25 to 33 has described the Sankhya Yoga to Devahuti. So Hridayan Maharaj writes in the purport, it is significant that Lord Kapila did not discriminate against his mother because she was a woman, nor did he consider her incapable of understanding the most elaborate spiritual knowledge. Thus, in a Krishna consciousness society of liberated souls, any man, woman or child may become a great devotee of Lord Krishna without discrimination. So the conclusion of Sankhya Yoga, so Sankhya Yoga means analytical study of matter and spirit. But the conclusion of Sankhya Yoga is basically twofold. Surrender to the lotus feet of the devotees and surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Or developing love of God. Conclusion is, one has to surrender to the lotus feet of the devotees. As I mentioned, when we actually analyze the situations of this world with one's higher intelligence, then a person actually comes to value the association of a bona fide spiritual master. So the conclusion of Sankhya is that a person takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And then he says that a spiritual master becomes bona fide by his full surrender to his spiritual master. But this means that an intelligent and perceptive person can understand the nature of this world and his own limitations. So Hridayan Maharaj says, when a person is actually intelligent, by observing this world he learns some things, and when a person is actually intelligent, he also understands the limitations of his own intelligence. He learns so many things by seeing the nature of this world, and he also understands his own limitations. So what does it mean? It means that when a person is actually intelligent, he understands that everything cannot be understood with his own intelligence. Ultimately, one has to actually take shelter of the spiritual master, the Supreme Lord. In one article I was reading, one should have the intelligence to doubt the supremacy of one's intelligence. So we have to use our intelligence to understand, but also that intelligence should also be understood, used to actually doubt the supremacy of our intelligence. And it takes great intelligence to recognize that our intelligence is not great enough. It takes great intelligence to recognize that our intelligence is not great enough. So that's why when a person is actually intelligent, he understands the limits of his own intelligence, and then when he understands that, he actually takes shelter of Krishna's intelligence. So
knowing means to know that what you don't know, and then to know what you don't know.
So to understand the limitations of our own intelligence also. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur says that, according to Vishnu Chakra Thakur, Sankhya Yoga refers to the rigorous intellectual progress of the Jnana Yoga system along with the devotion of Bhakti Yoga, which emphasizes the mercy of the pure devotees and the Supreme Lord. So basically, Sankhya refers to using one's intelligence to analytically understand by seeing the nature of this world, and Yoga refers to Bhakti Yoga. When we take shelter of Bhakti Yoga, means Bhakti Yoga means basically taking shelter of the grace of the devotees of the Lord. So when the point of faithfulness and thoughtfulness. Sankhya refers to like using one's intelligence, being thoughtful to understand. And practicing Bhakti means being faithful to the instructions of the Guru and Guru Sadhu and Shastra. So why Krishna is speaking these things? Because very soon Krishna is going to disappear from this world, And Krishna has given the instruction to Uddhava that you must go to Badrikashram and you must actually give your association to sages of Badrikashram. He has told Uddhava to actually, with a spiritual realization, you should actually wander in this world in his absence. So therefore Krishna is training Uddhava how he can be on the spiritual platform even after his disappearance. So that is why Krishna is telling Uddhava to use his intelligence and learn from this world and be situated on the spiritual platform. So that means it is an important point as teachers, as parents, like we have to give training to people in such a way that they follow the principles even in our absence. It is not that we should make the people dependent on ourselves. Like from the point of view of the subordinate, he always feels, one should feel the dependence on the superior. From the point of view of Uddhava, he felt that how I can survive without your association. He should feel a dependence on them. But from the point of the superiors, he should not make the subordinate dependent on him. One should actually give sufficient training in such a way that a person can be Krishna conscious, a person can follow the right principles even in his absence. Then the actually training becomes complete. So then in the 22nd verse, Krishna is telling how the human form of life is most dear to him. So here he says that in this world there are many kinds of created beings, some with one leg, some with two legs, some with many legs. And there are some living entities with no legs. But out of all these, human form is actually most dear to me. So there is another place in the 11th canto, I think one of the previous chapters it comes. It is described in the, or maybe in the later chapter of Uddhava Gita only, that it is described that the Supreme Lord created different living entities. He was dissatisfied till the point he created human beings. Only when he created the human beings, he became satisfied. Because he felt that, oh, now I have given an opportunity to the living entity for attaining self-realization. Just like when a person is creating some cars or something, some technology, the person actually comes to a certain level, then the person becomes satisfied. So Krishna became satisfied when he created the human beings. So when you talk about human beings versus animals, the difference between human beings and animals, we can see in terms of inherited characteristics and acquired characteristics. So there are certain qualities and characteristics which we actually inherit from our birth, as certain qualities which we actually acquire as time progresses by our lifestyle and different this one. So in the case of lower species, 80-90% of their qualities is only inherited characteristics. They cannot acquire more characteristics. Whatever, most of the qualities only inherited characteristics. But the speciality of the human being is that, although we may inherit certain characteristics from the birth, but depending on how we live in this world, we can acquire more characteristics. It may be good or bad. But in the case of the animals, the 80-90% of the characteristics is only inherited characteristics. There is only very little scope for actually getting new characteristics, acquired characteristics. I was hearing in some class of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Psychologically, if you see. Like for example, if you see, if somebody may be born of a father and mother, both have the nature of irritable nature. So his acquired characteristics is, because both are having that nature, a person is also angry and irritable. But then, if a person gets a good association, he puts efforts, he can change that nature also. But in the case of the animals, there's very little scope for actually changing the nature, because maximum of the characteristics is actually inherited characteristics. So basically, humans and animals, the capacity to learn is actually high in the human beings. In the case of the animals, the capacity to acquire more things, to learn more things, that is actually less. So capacity to learn and also pass on that learning to others. So that is what differentiates a human being from an animal. The animal cannot learn new things. Very few things he can learn, mostly whatever is actually inherited characteristics. And not only it cannot learn more, it can also not pass on that learning. But human being can, the capacity to learn and pass on the learning is more. So next verse.
Can I mention a little more? Please, Maharaj said about this self-learning. Sometimes in the orchestra, many drum players are there, many harmoniums are there. If someone is not playing well, no one understands. Sometimes Lord creates a situation where you need to play solo. There everyone is observing how you play. So that time your real test of character is. So I think that is what is recommended here. That you know, we need to be independent, be confident.
अत्र मा मृगयन्त्यद्दा युक्ता हेतुभिरीश्वरं गृह्यमाणैर्गुणैर्लिङ्गैर् अग्राह्यम् अनुमानतः
Although I, the Supreme Lord, can never be captured by ordinary sense perception, those situated in human life may use their intelligence and other faculties of perception to directly search for me through both apparent and indirectly ascertained symptoms.
So he is actually giving this series of verses. This is a concluding verse of Krishna. And then the 23rd verse, he concludes the series of instructions. He is giving the philosophical concept from the 19th to 23rd verse. These five verses, Krishna is giving this philosophy of how one should use one's intelligence to understand. And then from the 24th verse, he will give an example of a person who, by using his intelligence, he learned so many things. So always you will see in the scriptures, philosophy is given and how an example of a person who has applied that philosophy. Philosophy and also in the Ajamil section also, Shukdev Goswami in the beginning of 6th canto, he talks about how the Bhakti Yoga is superior to Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda. And then he comes to the point of that verse, Sakran Manak Krishna Padaravindayur, how when by once chanting the holy name, you can actually, you'll never see the Yamadutas like that. He gives the philosophy in the first like 20 verses. And then to support that philosophy, he tells, in this connection, great sages tell the story of Ajamil. To prove that philosophy, gives the story. So this is the concluding verse in the series of philosophical lesson. So here Krishna is saying, Atra mam mrigayanti adda. Adda means directly. So he says that engaged in bhakti, they search for me, the Supreme Lord, directly by processes like hearing and chanting. But I am not attained by inference using indicators and law, intelligence. This is Vishnu Chakravarti's translation. But basically what Krishna is saying is that those situated in human life may use their intelligence and other faculties of perception to directly search for me through both apparent and indirectly ascertained symptoms. So basically, here he says, devotees do not abandon their intelligence and become mindless fanatics, as some fools think. Hridayananda Maharaj is writing in the purport. And here he says that when it is mentioned that a devotee engaged in bhakti yoga intensely searches out the personality of Godhead through all of the rational faculties of the human brain. So Krishna is saying one should search for me directly and indirectly. So directly, indirectly means by seeing the different events of this world and then learning some things. And direct searching means, direct searching here he refers to that searching in the Vedic scriptures. So Hridayan Maharaj gives a beautiful example. So suppose if you want to know a particular telephone number of a particular person, so you will not search for a telephone number maybe in some newspaper or something and a magazine. You will actually take out a telephone directory and then search for the telephone number. So that is what actually making an authorized search or a like proper search. You have to take out the telephone directory and search. Similarly, if you have to search for the Supreme Lord, you have to search in the pages of the Vedic literatures. So that's what he explained that indirect search means indirect search. Indirectly searching means indirectly one may experience the Lord through his creation by vibhuti yoga, basically the different events of this world. From that we can learn some things.
Seems very similar to 2.9.36. Search for me everywhere.
Like Chatushloki
Bhagavatam.
So indirectly searching means since we are experiencing this world through our intelligence, we may conclude that our own intelligence must have a creator, and that creator is therefore supremely intelligent. So Hridayan Maharaj in the purport, and there are two meanings of the word directly searching and indirectly searching. One meaning of the word indirectly searching means by seeing the creation, creation of the Supreme Lord, how it is intelligently created. That means our intelligence must also have a creator, and by learning different lessons from this world. And directly searching means searching from the pages of the Vedic scriptures. Jiva Goswami is mentioning that the Supreme Lord is not a product of the imagination, and thus we cannot whimsically imagine what the Lord might be. In order to gain information about Lord Krishna, one must conduct a regulated search in the pages of the Vedas. So directly searching means not just whimsically actually trying to understand God, but one must conduct a regulated search in the pages of the Vedas. So this is one meaning of the word directly searching and indirectly searching. And another meaning of the word directly perceiving and indirectly searching means, directly perceiving means that by hearing and chanting, by practicing the 9 processes of devotional service, by actually trying to understand the Lord, by trying to search for the Lord. So that is what direct searching. And for another meaning for indirect searching it is not mentioned, but this is like another meaning of the word direct searching. So in the last, at the end of this purport, Hridayan Maharaj quotes this verse from the second canto, second chapter, 35th verse. Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu Lakshita Swatmana Hari Drishyair Buddhyadibir Drashta Lakshanir Anumanam Anumapake. Krishna is every living being. Lord Krishna is in every living being with the individual soul, and this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So I will just summarize. This particular verse is an important verse. If you go through the purport in the second canto, Prabhupada gives a very long purport in the second canto. But essentially what Prabhupada mentions, I will mention here. So what Prabhupada says is here, by using one's intelligence, how much what we can understand, what we cannot understand. So he says by using one intelligence, we can understand the difference between the body and the soul. How we are not the body and we are the spirit soul. Because with our common sense also we can understand. A person is using intelligence from the higher nature. And then he says, and also by using our intelligence, we can understand how we are not independent, but we are dependent on the various energies supplied by the nature. Using our intelligence, we can understand how we are not independent, we are controlled by superior forces. So here also it's explained that since we are experiencing this world with our intelligence, we may conclude that our intelligence must have a creator, and that creator is supremely intelligent. So by using our intelligence, we can understand the Prabhupada explained, we can understand the presence of the super soul. But Prabhupada says, to understand the personality of Godhead, that's not possible simply by using our intelligence. That is possible only by the grace of the Lord, or grace of the spiritual master. So with our intelligence, we can at the most understand material world is miserable. We can understand the difference between the body and the soul. And we can understand that the person is a super soul. But to understand the personality of Godhead, that is possible only by the grace of the Supreme Lord. So that is what essentially is explained in that particular verse which is quoted here. So now we are coming to a very beautiful important section. Before the Avadhut Brahmana starts telling his gurus, so now these next 5 verses are 7-8 verses are like very beautiful verses. So now Krishna says, in this connection, great sages cite a historical narration concerning the conversation between King Yadu and Avadhuta Brahmana. So now Krishna is going to give an example of a person who used this process to learn so many things. So if we see, when we actually by studying the past history, we can learn so many things. Learning from the past, by hearing the past events, we can do a shortcut for our learning. So, because especially the modern culture is something, the implication of Darwin's theory is that anything old is bad. When you say that our forefathers were monkeys, it's like anything old is bad. We are at the most advanced time right now. So the implication of Darwin's theory is that there is nothing to learn from the past. But the scriptures say that when we learn from the past events which are recorded in the scriptures, we can do a shortcut for our learning. So that is what scriptures are like the front light of the car, and the experience is like the backlight of the car. Because when you are going in a dark night, dark road, the front light is not on, only the backlight is on. After going over the maybe some bumps, then you understand, then you see with the help of backlight, I bumped into this thing. But if the front light is on, you don't have to go over the bump, you can actually avoid going over the bump. It's like using the past, from the scriptures, we can do a shortcut for our learning. We can avoid that particular mistake, or we can avoid that particular mistake which we can avoid that. So now in the King Yadu is actually asking certain questions. That's from the 26th to 31st verse. Before that, the Maharaj Yadu observes a Brahmana. Avadutam dvijant kanchit charantam akutobayam kavim nirikshyat tarunam yadu paprachya dharmavit.
Maharaj Yadu once observed a certain Brahmana Avaduta who appeared to be quite young and learned, wandering about fearlessly. Being himself most learned in spiritual science, the king took the opportunity and inquired from him as follows.
So here Maharaj Yadu saw a Brahmana was young, learned, and was wandering fearlessly. Was young, learned, wandering fearlessly. And the fourth quality is that, these are the three qualities which are mentioned. So, here we see, he saw a wandering fearlessly means, like he was absolutely renounced, he was like, he is completely satisfied within. So, we can see here, some people may renounce in this world because of frustration, because of not having knowledge or because of not having abilities. But such renunciation is not sustainable. Like when a person becomes frustrated about a specific event, that frustration may last only for some time. But in order to have lasting detachment, one has to have knowledge of the generic nature of the material world. How the material world, in general, it is miserable. Otherwise, one cannot actually have that detachment. So, frustration of the specific, it cannot last long. So, here it is explained, the word dharmam with is actually used for yadu. Means like, Maharaj Yadu himself was actually knowledge of the scriptures. He was himself with actually dharmavit. But still he inquired from the Brahmana. So this shows that because he is dharmavit, he could identify, oh, this particular Brahmana is highly learned. As we say, it takes one to know one. Because he was dharmavit, so he could actually understand. And how did he understand this Brahmana is having so much of knowledge? Was this Brahmana carrying some medal or certificate and then taking over, oh, I am so learned, I have got this certificate. How did he understand that Maharaj, how did Maharaj Yadu understand this person is having knowledge? He understood by seeing his symptoms. How he was like young, fearless, wandering fearlessly, that means he was not too excited about worldly things, he was completely satisfied within. So by seeing his disposition, the way he was actually carrying himself, he could actually understand, oh, I should actually hear from him. As we say that our actions speak louder than the words. So by seeing his disposition, he could actually understand this person is very learned. So now Yadu is asking some very beautiful questions. You can read the translation, 26th.
O Brahmana, I see that you are not engaged in any practical religious activity, and yet you have acquired the most expert understanding of all things and all people within this world. Kindly tell me, sir, how did you acquire this extraordinary intelligence, and why are you traveling freely throughout the world, behaving as if you are a child?
So here, Yadu is asking about the source and the use of his knowledge. He's saying, how did you acquire this knowledge? And secondly, why are you traveling freely like a child? As if you are a child. How are you going to use this knowledge? So, like many times if you see, like suppose somebody is like highly expert in the knowledge of say electronic gadgets or something. And if you had not gone to school only, it will be inquisitive that, oh, how did you get this knowledge? So usually, we acquire knowledge by putting some effort to actually hear from others or putting some effort. But here, this person, he appeared to be so much knowledgeable, but he did not appear to be putting some effort. He did not appear to be put some effort to actually get that knowledge. So therefore, Yadu is asking this question. So, and then he is also asking that, like, what are you doing with so much of knowledge? How are you using this knowledge? Then at 27th verse, he says that, generally people work hard to perform dharma, artha, kama, and moksha for knowledge of the soul. Generally work hard to cultivate dharma, artha, kama and acquire knowledge of the soul for the purpose of increasing the duration of their lives or to get fame or to enjoy wealth. Generally people Even when they are religious, they actually, when they dharmartha kama, just to get more wealth or fame or to increase their lifespan. But then he is asking the next verse. But in this, in your case, you have got knowledge, skill and good body, but why do you not desire anything? Why are you living like a madman? So this 28th verse is very important. So 28th verse, if you see the first two lines, Tvam tu kalpa kavir daksha. So the first two lines he is explaining different positive qualities of this Brahmana. You are actually capable and you are learned and you are expert and you are handsome and you are Amrita Bhashana. You are actually very good in speaking sweetly. He is telling the positive qualities, and the third and fourth line he is giving completely like negative qualities. Although you are having so many qualities, but you are not doing anything. Na karta. Not only you are not doing anything, but you are jada. You are like a dumb person. Or a dull person, like even more little higher, strong word. And then he is saying, not only you are jada, you are unmatta, you are acting like a mad person. And finally he concludes when you are acting like a ghost. So he is highlighting the contrast between his qualities and the way he is behaving. So here we see that means, like in this case, this Brahmana is having the ability, but he is not doing anything. Usually people go to personality development courses in order to get these qualities, to become handsome or to speak nicely, to become expert, etc. So that they can actually conquer something, to achieve success. But here, like this person is having all these things, but he is not using all those talents. So therefore, here Hridayananda Maharaj writes, but this verse talks about this point, that usually people think that like renunciation is meant for people who could not achieve something in this world. Because they could not, they felt, oh, this world is too big for me to achieve something, or too difficult for me to gain. So therefore, let me renounce. But this verse actually shatters that conception. A really wise person detaches not because the world is actually too big to gain, because that he understands that the world is worthless to gain. He understands the temporary nature of this world. He renounces not because of frustration, but because he understands the futility of the material gains. And then he understands the value of the devotional achievements, therefore he actually detaches. Of course, when we talk about the principle of detachment, it is not like only with respect to somebody who joins the, say, temple or a brahmachari or a sannyasi or something. Because as a devotee, whatever, whether as a housewife or even as a grahastha, there is some degree of going away from this world. There is some degree of going away from this world. Even a person who is living outside, maybe dealing with a sense object, but there is some degree of detachment. So basically that the point is that in the case of a wise person, the detachment is not because of frustration, but because of actually enlightenment, because of understanding the futility of this world, and because of understanding the how Krishna is so great. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes here that often foolish persons deride the devotees by saying, why don't you get a job? They think that one who is sincerely endeavoring for spiritual enlightenment and who is also enlightening others is not doing anything practical. And foolish materialists will pay millions of dollars to extend their lives by a few weeks or months in a hospital, but they do not appreciate someone endeavoring for eternal life. So there is no actual logic in material life. The act of trying to enjoy without Krishna is in itself the culmination of irrationality, and thus we cannot expect to find anything ultimately rational or logical in a materialistic life devoid of Krishna consciousness. So actually the act of trying to enjoy without Krishna, that is the height of illogical or irrational, that's what he is saying there. So then finally Hridayan Maharaj says that a real devotee of Krishna voluntarily gives up all types of material enjoyment, knowing that nothing but love of Krishna and service is lotus feet are the actual perfection of life. So basically this verse talks about how one has to go above from frustration to actually, like initially a person may, of course initially when we come to Krishna consciousness, we may come because of certain frustration or because of, to get relief from certain distress. But if we are only on that platform, we cannot actually sustain that. So we have to actually go from the stage of frustration to understand the futility of the material world. And then to, we have to understand the glory of devotional achievements. Because as I mentioned, when you talk about renunciation, it does not mean, this principle applies to everywhere, everyone. It's not only a person who is leaving the temple or something. But this principle applies to everyone. But different people, some people are expected to show external detachment and also have internal detachment. Especially those on the renounced order. They are supposed to have external detachment, also have internal detachment. Internal detachment is a real detachment. But those who are living outside, they are not supposed to have external detachment in certain aspects. Only in certain aspects, like with respect to some direct sinful activity, they are supposed to have external detachment. But otherwise, we're living this world, like when a person is acting as a householder, he is supposed to act as if he is attached. But internally, he should be detached. Basically, externally, he should not show detachment. If a person is like, has got married or something, you should not say external detachment. That will create a lot of problem. You should have internal detachment. So, but the principle here is that the detachment should not be because of frustration, but because of understanding the futility of the material world. So then he says in the next verse, Janeshu dakhya maneshu kama lobada vagnina na tapya segni na mukto gangam basta yivadvipaha.
Although all people within the material world are burning in the great forest fire of lust and greed, you remain free and are not burned by that fire. You are just like an elephant who takes shelter from a forest fire by standing within the water of the Ganges river.
So here he says that he gives the next this one. Although you are very young, but how is it that you are not afflicted with lust although you are young? How you are not afflicted with lust or greed? Kama, loba, davagnina. And kama and loba, they are compared to the forest fires, davagni. So many times we think about the miseries of the material world in terms of only birth, old age, disease and death. When you talk about birth, old age, disease and death, people give the argument, anyway, old age will come after some years. Right now I am not miserable, one may say like that. So people give that argument. But actually, another type of miseries is when a person is like attacked by the miseries of this material desires in terms of lust and greed. So that is also actually misery. So that misery is there actually right from the beginning. So he is saying that you are very young, but still you are not afflicted by lust and greed. You are like an elephant who has, he says that when there is a forest fire, so an elephant comes and takes shelter of a fast flowing river. So then he is not affected by the forest fire. So from the external fire, and also elephants are known for their lusty nature. And when the elephants come inside the come under the water, then their lust actually subsides. So there is internal and external subjugation from the parasphere as well as from the lust. So similarly, he is saying, so you are like an elephant who actually takes shelter from a forest fire by standing within the water of the Ganges river. So in the case of a spiritualist, how does he take shelter from the forest fire of lust and greed? By standing within the river of spiritual bliss. So Hridayanand Maharaj writes here that by following the example of a elephant, one situates him within the cooling waves of transcendental bliss, then all the material desire will soon be extinguished and one will become shanta or peaceful. So then the next verse, Yadu is saying, last question he is asking, he says that generally, so in the 29th verse he mentioned about, like, you are very young but you are not affected by lust and greed. On the 30th verse he is saying that not only you are devoid of any contact with the sense enjoyment or sense objects, but also you do not have any companions also. You do not have any companions, but still you are actually wandering with great happiness. So what is the source of your happiness? So usually, if you see the psychology, a person seeks the company of the opposite sex, either a man or a woman, either for gross pleasure or for basically some companion, some partner in the life. So when a person is young, a person is looking in terms of bodily pleasure, and when a person is old, he may not be tormented with the grass pressure, but then one may feel the need of a companion or a friend. But in the case of this Brahmana, he is neither contacting any sense object in the sense like, he is not looking for gross pleasure, and he is without any companions, but still he is completely happy and blissful. So therefore he is asking that, what is the cause of your great ecstasy? So if we see that, so this verse, this series of verses gives a very important lesson. When we actually come in contact with a saintly person, saintly association, it actually impels us to question our definition of happiness. Usually our definition of happiness is that, like, maybe getting a good degree or good money or good job, or by getting these things, by getting a good car, or by that we will become happy. And many times a person comes to spirituality also with that intention. So then what? Then at the most a person becomes a pious religionist. He just becomes a pious religionist. But when a person actually takes shelter of a saintly person, he doesn't become simply a pious religionist, but from a pious religionist, he actually starts questioning his definition of happiness. Because he is asking this question that, you are having all these capabilities, you have the ability to conquer this world, but not only you are not engaged in any sense activities, but you do not even have a desire to perform any, like, sense gratificatory activities. You are completely indifferent to this world, and you are completely happy. So what is the source of your happiness? So saintly association should actually impel us to question our definition of happiness. So our definition of happiness is by acquiring so many things. But here he is saying that you are not having any of these things. You are not doing any of the normal activities which people do to get happiness. But still you are so happy. So what is the source of your happiness? So that is the... This is the turning point in a person's life, and a person grows from becoming a pious religionist to a serious spiritualist. When a person becomes a serious spiritualist, he starts questioning his definition of happiness. So he is saying that your presence has completely changed my definition of happiness. It has completely challenged my definition of happiness. So then the Avadhut Brahmana starts answering. So this Brahmana, when he actually hears these questions of Maharaj Yadu, he starts answering. So Vishnu Chakotakur says that why the Brahmana started replying to the king, because of the two qualities of the from the king, because of his service attitude and because of his intelligent questions. Then the Brahmana says, I will just take a 35th verse, and then the Brahmana says, with my intelligence I have taken shelter of my many spiritual masters. Having gained transcendental understanding from them, I now wander about the earth in a liberated condition. Please listen as I describe them to you. So he is saying that I have taken shelter of many spiritual masters with my intelligence. Usually we go to a spiritual master and we hear from the spiritual master. But in the case of the spiritual masters of this Brahmana, none of them actually spoke to him. So with his intelligence, he learned from them. He took shelter of them, he learned from them. So actually what it show, he gives actually the list of 24 gurus. Earth, air, sky, water, fire, moon, sun, pigeon, python, sea, moth, honeybee, etc. Even he gives a guru of pingala, prostitute, a hunter, a girl, arrow maker, spider, serpent, like that. So one thing we can see is that many times our learning, it depends very much on the particular situation. Like we learn some things only when we hear from a, say, spiritual master, or only when we hear from a senior devotee. So our learning is very much many times dependent on whom we hear from. But here in the case of the Brahmana, many times, like when suppose sometimes an equal may be saying something, or sometimes a junior may be saying something, and because we are not having the proper receptive attitude from them, even though he may be saying something which we need to adopt in our life, we may not take it seriously. Because our learning disposition is dependent on whom we hear from, or in a dependent on a particular situation. Only when we come to temple, okay, we are in a particular mood in front of the sitting in the temple also, everyone is listening, so I should also listen. But when we are outside, like we are not in a learning, we don't have the learning disposition. But here we see this Brahmana is having a constant learning mood. So usually Brahmana means one is actually teaching others. So many times when we are, because of teaching others, over a period of time, we may forget the need to actually learn from others or hear from others. In fact, it is described in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that when a living entity falls from the spiritual world to the material world, it is described that a living entity develops four desires. So initially, a living entity develops a desire to associate with the opposite sex, because a person feels the incompleteness due to forgetting Krishna. And secondly, the soul wants to have children. This is another desire to imitate the creative ability of Krishna. And third is, in order to maintain the creation, he is seeking wealth. The third desire for wealth. And fourth is that, in spite of all these arrangements, he is frustrated, so he gets the desire to speak to himself by speaking the glory of himself, glory of him to others. So in that sense, like the desire to speak, like what I want to highlight is that the desire to actually speak is actually nonsense. It is as a result of actually falling from the, when a person falls from the spiritual world, these four desires, their conditions will develop. When he becomes frustrated with the first three desires, then a person wants to speak about himself. So, but here, this Brahmana, he is actually, Brahmana means he is actually teaching others, but here he is not only these people are, they did not speak to him, but he, with his intelligence, he learned from them. So from that we can understand his learning disposition. How he is having a constant learning disposition. So when you have that kind of learning disposition, then life becomes actually a great adventure. We can, in any situation, we can learn even from anybody. From somebody we may learn what we should not do. But somebody we may learn what we should do. Even from a materialist who is actually determined to achieve the wrong things, we can at least learn the quality of determination. If we are so determined to achieve the wrong things, so why cannot be so determined to actually serve the Lord? So this constant learning mode is actually very important. So that's why he gives this 24 gurus. And just few points about learning. Purpose of learning is that, like many times in the material world, the purpose of learning is either for yearning or for controlling. But these two purposes are not appreciated in the spiritual culture. Like in the Vedic culture, the purpose of learning is not for yearning. Like there is one thinker here, he mentioned, learning is what you remember after you forget what you have been taught in the school. Learning is what you remember after you forget what you have been taught in the school. In the school, many times we just memorize and then we just reproduce in the exam. But after you forget that, what you have actually assimilated, what you have become an actual fabric of your life, that is what actually real learning. So, even in the Vedic culture, the purpose of learning for yearning is not appreciated. But even actually in the other cultures, now the situation may be different, but even in the other cultures, the purpose of learning is not for yearning. There's one mathematician, he was teaching some trigonometry to the students. The student asked, how can I earn some money using this knowledge of trigonometry? So he said, actually, for you, all that matters for you is only a coin. So better you go from this knowledge is not meant for you. The point is, even in the other cultures, learning for earning was not appreciated. And another purpose for learning, like in the case of scientists, they actually invented different gadgets, etc., basically to control. But actually learning is neither for yearning nor for controlling, but learning is actually to harmonize our inner nature with the Supreme Lord. That is the actual purpose of learning. So we can see here, because this Brahmana is saying, from all these 24 gurus, what I have learned is Anvasiksham Ihatmanaha. I have learned the science of the self. So this particular, to have this learning disposition, means like to have that, to always be in the mood of actually a student, and that will actually help us. Because even if you see that it is described that, like sometimes we think, oh, initially there is a certain period of training. But it is described in the 10th canto that even when a person becomes a pure devotee, that before a person goes to the spiritual world, he has to go to the particular planet where Krishna is performing pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan to get further training before going to the spiritual world. Which, like, training is there even after. So better to be in the mood of a student. So in that sense. So this learning attitude ensures that we learn not just occasionally, but we are learning constantly. Then it becomes an exciting thing. Life becomes exciting. What I can learn from this situation, what I can learn. I mean, like we can see every situation through the eyes of the scriptures. So how the scriptural teachings are reinforced, what I can learn from this. So that's what actually we see in the Maharaj has written from the Journey Home book. So that's why, like, of course, it does not mean that the scriptures also mention tadviddhi pranipatena pariprasena sevaya. You have to approach a spiritual master, learn from him, hear from him. But real learning is that which continues even after the class ends. When you go to the spiritual master, we learn from him. But how much you are actually assimilated is that which continues even after the class is over. So that depends on how we have the actually learning disposition. So even in the materialist, even if we see in the material education also, we have the concept of continuing education program. Like even after getting the degrees, people like continue to learn something. So even in the spiritual life also, there is this continuing education program based on the particular disposition. So this, like when we talk about taking shelter of a spiritual master, so many times people think like taking shelter of a spiritual master means they think in terms of the external ritual of that, maybe yajna, performing that yajna, etc. But the shelter is not by performing the external ritual. The shelter of a spiritual master is basically by trying to develop the particular learning disposition. So that is what it actually means, taking shelter of a spiritual master. So this Brahmana is having the learning disposition, and then he starts explaining what he have learned from each of these gurus. So I will stop here. So on Sunday we will complete the whole chapter. So I wanted to, because this particular concept is important, I went a little slowly. So now rest of the chapter we will complete on Sunday. Of course, this 24 gurus are explained in this chapter. In the next chapter, we will take little more detail, especially about the realizations of Pingala. That we will take one class, because that is a very important, very beautiful section. And so this chapter, the remaining gurus, there are some, I think 8 or 9 gurus are mentioned in this chapter. So that we will take up in this next class. And then next to next class, we will take up Pingala. And then that will proceed. So what we will do is, as I mentioned, because this particular, like, we have to consciously cultivate this habit of actually learning from different situations. That is why I had mentioned about that assignment, that what you have learned, it's like when we talk about this learning, it's not that in order to learn we have to go on some sightseeing mission or something. Oh, let me learn from different things. Oh, let me go and watch this movie, or let me go and do this. No, we don't have to do that. In the sense, whatever we have experienced, we at the same time, it's not that, like, we don't have to, like sometimes we think that initially a person sees the material world in terms of like how I can enjoy this. And then when a person takes a spiritual life, initially, a person has the mood of, oh, I have to just refrain from everything, he sees in the mood of detachment. But when a person further advances even more, then he simply does not see in terms of detachment, he sees in terms of, oh, what I can learn in this situation, how I can see Krishna in this situation. So this particular exercise of this particular cultivating this particular habit of what I can learn from different events or different interactions of this world, seeing people, it could be either some events which you have seen as experienced before coming to Krishna consciousness or after coming. So based on that, you will have to see like what you have learned. You can, that's why I mentioned that you can write some 2 or 3 experiences. So this will help you to actually cultivate this habit. So,
give an example of what type of experience.
It could be any experience. Example, this one. Like for example, like I was. One example I'll give. Like recently, this movie PK came. So I was thinking. In the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, we'll see in the Uddhava Gita also Krishna gives the concept later, what is called as Parokshavad. Parokshavad means, like when Narada Muni was preaching to Prachina Barishad, he tells a story of, allegorical story of Puranjan. Because Prachina Barishad was a great king, so he was not ready for direct spiritual instruction. So Narada Muni spoke the story of Puranjan and indirectly he gave spiritual instructions. In fact, he says at the end, I have actually spoken the story, but it is actually, I have described the glories of Lord Mukunda through this story. This is the story meant to give spiritual instruction, but I have given the spiritual instruction indirectly through Parokshava. So I was thinking, this, for example, when I heard about this PK movie. So if in the Narada Muni, when he spoke the story of Puranjan, that story contains romance, adventure, Puranjan meeting his wife and Puranjan going on hunting. It contains adventure, romance and different elements of a story which actually which can captivate the mind of a person. But indirectly what he has given Krishna. So materialists, when I heard that PK movie, they also adopt the same Parokshavad. The movie contains nice romantic songs, nice comedy, nice maybe cinematography, good actor, good actress. So everything is there, but they use that to actually take a person away from God. So, it's like using Parokshavad to, I'm just giving one example, it could be anything actually. The same way, like when I read this concept in the scriptures and then I tried to see it through that. When I heard this movie, then I tried to relate with this. So similarly, it could be some other event or not just this concept, it could be any concept in the scriptures.
Any lesson to build your or strengthen your faith in Krishna or Krishna consciousness?
We should write, really contemplate and then write this answer. We should write not for the sake of writing, because this Brahmana is actually internalized the lessons and then he is actually telling.
Everybody will have a different experience in their own life and they have learned different lessons. That is what you are.
You don't have to, in the sense, you have to tell some personal something, you don't have to, something which you feel awkward, you don't have to tell that, but it could be some experience which you can share like that. It will be writing that, it will be a good habit of that, and we try to cultivate that habit constantly, then life becomes adventure actually. Because even in preaching, people appreciate when you actually give your personal experience, what you have learned in that situation. Then people, because when you quote the scriptures, then people, they may go to sleep or something like that. But when you start telling about your own story, personal life story, what related to the personal experience, what you have learned, what there in the scriptures, what you have learned from that, then it is also helpful for the preaching and it's also helpful for you to actually have this learning disposition. So I'll stop here. You can collect the Next week onwards, we'll start the recitation and distribute the flow.
What is four determined development when fall down?